Health and Human Senate Health and Human Services together. Today we're going to do a couple of work sessions, and we'll have some public hearings and hopefully work sessions as well. And we will start by, we're going to do Senate Bill. This is a work session. Open a work session on Senate Bill 144. Would you discuss 144?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 144 is a bill we heard back in, the committee heard back in January. It changes the name of the Board of Radiologic Technology to the Board of Medical Imaging Technology. It defines medical imaging technology and specific medical imaging technologies, including medical resonance imaging, medical sonography, nuclear medicine technology, radiation therapy, computed tomography, and mammography. And it brings these under the regulation of the board, the new, which will now be called the Board of Medical Imaging Technology. There was an amendment brought forth which would add physicians to the definition of licensed practitioners and allow physicians to use medical imaging technology. And that amendment was agreed upon between the BME and the board.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Chair,
yes.
I move the dash one amendments to Senate Bill 144.
Okay. Senator Montes Anderson moves the dash one amendments to Senate Bill 144. Discussion? Seeing no. Oh, I'm sorry. Senator Berger, did you?
I'm just going to make a comment. Mr. Chair, the only thing about this bill that has bothered me is that it puts a pretty good responsibility and power into the board, but I will be voting for the bill.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. Would you call the roll, please?
Oh, wait.
Have to make the amendment.
Oh, we're on the amendment. We're on the amendment. Okay. Seeing no objection on the amendment, so ordered. The amendment.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 144 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay. Further discussion? Seeing no further discussion, would you call the roll, please?
Senator Montes
Anderson? Aye.
Senator Berger?
Aye.
Senator George?
Excused.
Vice Chair Cruz?
Excused.
Chair
Morissette? Aye. Okay. Senate Bill 144 will move to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation, and Senator George will carry the bill. Okay. We now will open a work session on Senate Bill 59. Would you describe Senate Bill 59?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 59 is another bill we heard back in January. It reenacts a requirement repealed under the automatic repeal provision, which requires individual or group health insurance policies that provide coverage for acupuncture services performed by a physician to provide equal coverage for acupuncture services performed by a licensed acupuncturist. It repeals the original statute, which has already sunsetted and exempts this new requirement from the automatic repeal. You do have this, the committee has an amendment before them, the dash one amendment, which removes the restriction that insurance companies must compute reimbursement rates based on the customary and usual fee of acupuncturists in the area served. And this would allow insurance companies to use whatever process they usually use to determine policy reimbursements. And this was agreed upon between the Oregon Acupuncture Association and Regents.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I move the dash one amendments to Senate Bill 59.
Senator Montes Anderson moves the dash one amendments to Senate Bill 59. Discussion? Okay, seeing no discussion. So moved.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 59 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay, Senator Montes Anderson moves Senate Bill 59 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Call the roll, please.
Aye.
Senator George?
Excuse.
Senator Montes Anderson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Cruz?
Aye.
Chair Morissette?
Aye. Senate Bill 59 moves to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Would somebody like to carry that bill?
Senator Brown's bill, does he think?
Oh, Senator Brown will carry that bill. Very good. Thank you. Thank you. Before we go to the main event of the day, the Pain Commission, we're going to hear Senate Bill 865, which is Senator Metzger's bill. So We're going to open a public hearing. Ryan, would you like... Oh, I'm sorry. Ma'am, would you like to come up and testify for Senate Bill? All right.
He's just going to push me up there.
Oh, okay. Whether you want to be pushed or not, right?
I have laryngitis, so you'll have to listen to me very closely.
Okay, move the microphone in front and go ahead and give us your name for the record, please.
My name is Linda Deanna Simpson. I'm 66 years old. And what I came here to speak about was that the money that we get in our disability is not keeping up with the inflation. To show you, I got a $20 raise on my disability. My food stamps went down $59. If any of you have been to the grocery store, everything has doubled and tripled in the last 3 years. You can't buy anything. Now I'm getting $30 worth of food stamps this past month. After this month, I won't get any. To show you that gas, electricity, rent, food, medicine, and everything else has went up. I have fallen behind paying the same bills and even had my cable cut off 3 years ago to where I'm $153 short every month. That's without buying food. So I want to know from now, how do we do this? How do we keep up? Right now, I am sitting on a $193 light bill. I'm sitting on two other bills that I can't pay. Okay, I have Social Security disability. I have Medicare Part D. And I have the state insurance card. Right now, I have two prescriptions sitting at the drugstore to show you. Those two prescriptions for 1 month is $348.06. Because I have Medicare Part D and I have the state insurance, the pharmaceutical companies will not have anybody at all. I've tried them. I've jumped through the hoops. So I want to know why California and other states, because I was told by Ron Wyden and Gordon Smith, that they get a lot more food stamps. The other thing I would like to know is why some of these people that won't work at anything get tons of them, and they can, people like the disabled cannot get them. Now, I saw a lady the other day when I went and got my glasses. She was crying because she couldn't pay $94 for the glasses. She was going to use her old frames. If I'd had the $94, I would have gave it to the little old lady. I was in the grocery store. This lady bought six oranges, and it cost her $8. Now, with everything going up, all our money has done is go down because we are tied to a certain percentage of the gross domestic product. And so, well, you know, with the stress that people are having from not being able to pay their bills to makes their health go down. And you know, if they can't eat and they can't pay a light bill and they can't get the medicine, their health is going to go down. So Ron Wyden and Smith told me to get everybody across the United States to start writing this. Said it's a big problem for the whole United States.
Well,
so,
okay. We're trying to fix that partially with this bill. We're trying to solve that problem. We're asking the federal government to allow us to make, for you to keep your food stamp money even though your earnings have gone up. So,
well, here's the whole thing.
Social Security has gone up.
Every time you get a $20 raise on your disability, your food stamps go down. But everything else goes up. So you become $60 in 1 month that everything went up and your money went down.
Thank
Am I helping you by telling you all of this?
Yes, you certainly are. Yes. Thank you very much.
Do you need to ask me any questions?
Yes, Senator George.
Just really quickly, you mentioned something that just troubles me so greatly. My son-in-law, a few years ago, pulled over a young man and didn't have any ID whatsoever, but he had a Oregon food stamp card, you know, had the full thing. And he said to him, well, where are you from? And, well, he was out of California. Well, why don't you have any ID? Well, I'm an illegal alien.
Yeah.
Is what he said to him. And the thought of that was so offensive to me, because I have constituents in my district, just like you, who are American citizens, who have paid their way, who are now dependent upon the system, and they seem to be at the end of the line of getting these services. Have you experienced anything like that? Because
yes, that's what I've been trying to tell you. Here's another thing, and I'll tell you up front. I'm a straightforward person. You ask me anything, I'm going to tell you the truth. I don't care if it hurts me or you. Okay. I see people come to my house and ask me for food that used to live up above me. This person worked and was getting $230 worth of food stamps, which I get 30. And she wouldn't cook, and she went out and drank all night. I don't believe in that. If you don't work, you don't eat. Now, I do believe in taking care of the children. But there is so many of us that are in, we can't get out and work. I have post-polio Lyme disease. I've had open heart surgery. Oh, my kneecaps are turning around to the side. My muscles are gone. But if I was able to work, I would be out there working. And here's another thing. If the people are too lazy to work, they shouldn't even get food stamps. I'm sorry. But there's too many of us that have worked all of our life that can't get electricity paid. We can't get food. We can't buy our medicine. And as you know, if you're under stress, that's putting it bad on you. Did I answer your question?
You did, and I'm going to tell you what. That was, my mother worked hard all of her life, and not only was helped raise 9 children as the oldest of 9, but then had all of us and took care of the rest of the family, because the oldest child seems to do that. But I'm going to tell you, Mr. Chairman, there is nothing like this when a person becomes a senior citizen and they find that they're in fear for tomorrow. There's nothing that could be worse for our society to allow happen is for them to live in fear of the very substance necessary to make it through the next day. And I watched my mom with that, and I thought, this is one of the strongest women I've ever seen. And I saw her living in fear, even though we kept assuring her, no, don't you worry, we're going to take care of you. And yet, that when you reach that point, which you cannot provide for yourself.
I have no children. My mother and father's dead. All my sisters and brothers are dead. I'm alone.
Thank you very much.
Are you too with me? Yeah. I'm sorry, I'm not too good of a speaker when I get
you're,
to court.
You're right. Fine. You're doing fine. Thank you. Okay, we'll call Ryan. Would you come up, please, as a representative of the sponsor of the bill? And
Mr. Chair, thank you for having this hearing today. Linda went through a lot of explaining exactly what the situation is that everyday people are experiencing. And so basically,
you're gonna have to talk into the microphone.
So basically, I'm
introduce yourself, please.
Oh, for the record, I'm Ryan Tribbett, Chief of Staff for Senator Metzger.
Thank you.
Basically, the focus from our office is just on the end result, and we don't believe that this vulnerable demographic of low-income seniors that are on a fixed income should have their food benefits continuously chipped away at as time goes on. This bill, to give you a little history, it was Senate Bill 885 last session, Senator Ringo's. It did pass the Senate. It made it to the House, where it ended up not making it out of committee. There's a lot of confusion over the waiver process and how what the fiscal would be to the state and whether or not we can submit a waiver that is not cost neutral. I have gone to the fiscal office and gotten an opinion from them, and I'll just read one sentence from it. They said, since food stamps is an entitlement program, we feel that the USDA would only approve such a waiver based upon the availability of federal funds allocation to the state. The state could expand benefits on its own without a waiver, but that would have to do so using state rather than federal funds. So the point of the DHS waiver would be to access federal funds. Then just today, what you guys have in front of you, I went to Legislative Council and asked them because there was still confusion over the matter, and that's what's in front of you. But they said that there's nothing in federal statute that requires there to be cost neutrality in the waiver, and they've given a couple examples of times we've expanded food stamps and gotten waivers for it where it was definitely not cost neutral. So with that, that's all I have to say.
So what you're saying is that Legislative Council said in the past we have increased the go through
yes.
that one more time.
Please. I can read it for you. The examples they gave was Oregon has implemented several programs that have increased food stamp participation and are therefore not cost neutral. A categorical eligibility option allows the state to provide food stamps to any household with income below 185% of the federal poverty line, regardless of the household's assets. The waiver for able-bodied adults without dependents allows the state to continue food stamp benefits to unemployed adults beyond the federal 3-month time limit. These waivers and other options have allowed Oregon to increase food stamp participation and substantially reduce its rate of hunger. These programs are not cost neutral to the federal government, and there is no basis to believe that the waiver proposal in Senate Bill 865 would have a cost neutrality requirement either.
I guess it's time to hear from DHS. You can just stay there if you want. Monty Burke and Ms. Stockville, yeah. Welcome. Go ahead and introduce yourself, please.
I'm Chair Morissette and members of the committee. I'm Belit Stockley, manager of the food stamp program of the department.
Can you move the microphone?
Sorry.
You need a microphone.
I'm Belit Stockley, Chair Morissette, members of the committee. I'm Belit Stockley, manager of the food stamp program, Department of Human Services, Children, Adults, and Families. Senate Bill 865 directs the Department of Human Services to apply for a federal waiver to allow the food stamp program to disregard the annual cost of living increase of Social Security and SSI beneficiaries when determining eligibility for the food stamp program. The intent of this bill is to allow Social Security benefits and beneficiaries to realize the full annual food stamp cost of living increase rather than seeing some of that eroded by the decrease in their food stamp benefits as a result of the income. This bill is not clear on whether the department would move forward on the implementation of the U.S. Department of Agriculture agreed with the proposal but would not provide federal funding. The food stamp program is governed by federal law and regulations. To deviate from specific regulations allows state agencies are allowed to submit waiver requests when the approval would help improve the efficiency and effectiveness of the program administration. Acceptable waivers must be cost neutral to the food stamp program. There are two options that the department would use to approach this demonstration project. They're subject to further clarification on the funding issue discussed earlier. The first option is to seek a federal waiver request, which would include other policy changes. This would enable cost impact the cost impact of the waiver to not increase overall food stamp program costs. The additional action would reduce benefits within the general food stamp population. For example, DHS may choose to limit deductions such as shelter and utility costs for all participating households to maintain neutrality of the program. The second option is to establish a state-only funded food stamp food supplement program. With this program, the state would make up the lost food stamp benefit for this client group. The department estimates approximately 75,000 households would receive the Social Security cost of living adjustment each year. The SSI-SSB annual increase is about 3%. The department estimates the overall cost to implement this program as a state-only program would require $7 to $10 million in general funds. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to testify on behalf of DHS, and I'm available to answer any questions.
Senator Cruz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Your testimony and the opinion from Ledge Council seem to differ. And I would like an explanation of why they think that you don't have to be cost neutral and you maintain you do.
Senator Morissette. Chair Morissette, Senator Cruz, my name is Monty Burke. I'm the Quality Assurance Program Manager with Self-Sufficiency Programs. I think that the difference is between a waiver and a demonstration project. The federal government will not allow waivers around law. You can seek a waiver to get an exception to a regulation. But when it is in the law, it needs to be a demonstration project. And demonstration projects have the requirement of cost neutrality. Waivers do not.
Bob?
Yeah, yes.
Okay, I guess I'm just looking at the Ledge Council referenced the 2002 Farm Bill. And basically they're saying that Congress was silent on the issue, and on cost neutrality, Congress is usually very explicit. So my question is, if they were silent, have we tested that? I mean, you're assuming cost neutrality, but have you tested that concept since the 2002 Farm Bill?
Senator Cruz, Chair Morissette, I'm not sure if we have, but we can check on that and get back to you. I don't believe that we have. I believe every demonstration project that we have submitted has had cost neutrality as part of it.
Okay.
But we can check on that.
Okay. Mr. Chair, just one more follow-up. This is one of those things, if you don't ask, you don't know. Sort of thing, and clearly this is looking for a waiver, not a demonstration project, and I think we should test the opinion of Ledge Council that since Congress was not explicit, that maybe it doesn't have to be cost neutral. So,
any response?
Well, we said they look.
Yeah. Okay. Well, okay, excuse me. What do you mean by you'll look? You will make a contact or you'll...
Yeah, Senator Cruz, Chair Morissette, we will contact the Food and Nutrition Service and ask them if that's how you're directing us. Is that what you're wanting us to do?
Yes.
Okay.
Senator Bridger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This increase that a person gets in Social Security cost of living, does it put them into another bracket, a new category of something?
Senator Verger, Chair Morissette, I believe the increase, it impacts the calculation of their benefits. There is an annual cost of living increase that is, I believe it's October that comes through, and then the food stamp program, there's a cost of living increase that is applied in the food stamp program in January of the following year. So while it doesn't make up for the entire offset, it does take care of some of it in January. So I don't know if I answered your question. There aren't really categories.
I'm just kind of curious as to the kind of small percentage that you're going to get in the cost of living would cause me to now have a reduction in food stamps or reduction in anything until a few years had gone by. Now, in several years of a cost of living, I can see that that now puts me into a different category. But 1 year and you start revising my benefits, it looks to me like that's not quite fair. So that would be one thing. The other thing is, what do you do in looking at, probably the young lady needs to answer this, what do you do in looking for fraud in food stamps? What, in your department, is there an effort made, or is it all made from Washington, D.C.?
No, we locally have fraud investigators, and we also look for discrepancy in food stamp cases. We review our case files. We review them for accuracy. So there are things that we look for to make sure that verification is in the files and that, you know, the information is correct. And so we would be alerted to something that didn't fit with a case.
Mr. Chair, follow
yes.
up, please. So are you a response agency? In other words, if no one complains, you don't do anything, but if I complain, then you look into it?
Chair Morissette, Senator Verger, no, we aren't a response. We regularly review our food stamp case files, so we look at them on a regular basis. We have instituted our own review system for the program, so we are reviewing our own case files throughout the branches, which is more than just a QC review of cases. So we're proactive, and some of this has contributed to the reduction of our error rate because we're looking at our case files so much. We also have a wage match system where all of our employees or workers that work on these files can put in the Social Security number of the person that is turned in pay stubs, and they check in the system to make sure that the wages match what they've worked for.
Mr. Chair, could I respond to
yes.
that, please? I do not believe we can be all things to all people. There's not any way we can do that. But I think there are certain people that need to go to the head of the line. And I think people that are absolutely, totally unable to work, are disabled, who have led a good life, have not ended up in jail, have tried to obey our laws and do things, that we have an obligation in this country, I would hope in America, that we would have an obligation to see to it that they can have a roof over their head and food on the table and medicine if they need it. And I'm very disturbed because this is not just one isolated incident that I hear from seniors and disabled. And so it concerns me that we perhaps are not prioritizing, maybe is the best way to put it. And I'm not sure that you have anything at all to do with that personally or would have the responsibility of doing it. I'm just saying, as an elected official, I have the responsibility of looking at those incidences and sharing with you my concern.
Okay. Other questions?
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll ask either all three of you to answer this question. I'm looking at Senator Metzger and Morissette on this thing, and I'm looking at the language, and I'm trying to figure out what this bill appears to me, and I'm not back to normal yet, so bear with me, is that you're going to run this up the flagpole and see if they'll approve it. I don't see anything that would require you to do anything beyond the fact that if they said no. Is that correct? So what would be the problem with the bill to ask? It's kind of like...
No problem.
That's
the whole point of the bill, is to ask and see if we can resolve that issue at the federal level. Patty, no, just sit down, Patty. Ryan, you can step down for a moment, please, and Patty, would you please come up and say something that we want to hear, Patty.
Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Patricia O'Sullivan. I'm the Director of Public Policy for the Department of Human Services. Senator, in one way you're right, and in one way you're
more right.
Misguided. Actually, you're right.
Told you I was sick.
you run it up a flag, and actually, we're not here in opposition to this bill. We agree with the premise of this bill. In fact, I've been working with Ryan for a number of months now to kind of get the language right, and we didn't quite get the language that we were comfortable with. Therefore, that's the problem right now. So one thing is it's asking us to get a waiver, and we need to get a demonstration project because this is something that's in law, not rule. And that's the difference between what Lori's saying and what our folks are saying, is that Lori is absolutely correct. When it's in rule, we can get a waiver, and we have gotten waivers, and we have changed our program. This particular requirement is in law. Therefore, we have to apply for a demonstration project, not a waiver. And demonstration projects have different elements, one of them being neutrality. The only two ways to be neutral on this bill, therefore, if we have a gap, if we let folks keep their food stamp, their total food stamps, and yet they go, then that means there's more people getting food stamps in that category. We have no problem with that. The problem we have is it then leaves an $8 million hole in our budget because we have to make up the difference because there's more people. We'll have a higher caseload. So what the problem with this bill is that what we would have liked that amendment to say, and it wasn't put in there, was and it's not Ryan's fault because he had completely agreed with me 2 months ago on this, so it's not a problem there. But if we run the flag up and they say, this is a great idea, go ahead and do it, but we aren't giving you money. The bill says once we get approval. It doesn't say once we get approval and federal funding. So that was my problem, was I didn't want to run the red flag up and have them call our bluff and then us come back and guess what we would be doing in e-board in about 3 or 4 months after session, coming back and going, ooh, we have an $8 million gap because of this bill. So in trying to protect the agency and trying to be fiscally sound and trying to do what you've always asked us to do and to be transparent and to make sure that our numbers match, I just wanted that sort of a defense that if it got approved but they said no money, which is what they're going to say, have it cost neutral, then so they approve it but they don't give us the money, then we either reduce benefits for other people already on food stamps, or we somehow figure eligibility different and we stop people from coming onto food stamps in other categories, or we need general fund. That's my only thing. We have no problem with applying for this. We have no problem at all. What we want is the protection that if they say, okay, you can do it, have fun, do it with state money, that and there is no, you know, we're going to do a fiscal that just kind of says that, but otherwise this bill goes to Ways and Means. We do want to help Senator Metzger forward the bill without a fiscal impact and have us ask for the demonstration project.
So, yeah, Senator.
Patty, let me ask you a question. Do we, those of us in the legislature, come back session after session wanting you to continue to expand programs and include more people and more people? It's disturbing to me that we're trying to spread thin. Again, we're not going to be all things to all people. And so what good does it do if we're not taking care of people but adding more people at the end of the chain? And now we're not taking care of anybody. We're just 75% on everybody. And I just, please comment on that.
I will. Strategy. Senator Morissette, Senator Verger, I don't disagree with you. The thing is this is a federal program with federal requirements, and it's at this point all federal dollars. So we are not driving this car. We have other programs where you can make a decision that this is the category of people that we would like to serve, and maybe cut back just like you cut back standard, but you keep OHP plus. And now you have the healthy kids, and you decide kids, not adults, are the ones we want to cover. That's because we have state funding in there. This is an all federally funded program, and we're not driving this car. They're not our requirements.
Okay. I guess we should get an amendment and do the pilot project.
Senator Morissette, we can do it, and we'd run this flag up and test. We can test it, but basically it's supposed to be cost neutral, so we're not sure how we're supposed to even apply.
Senator,
but we can't. We could.
Senator Cruz.
Is there any way this could be morphed into a waiver?
Senator Cruz, I have no idea because okay. I don't know.
Well, I think we need to do is talk about this.
Mr. Chair, because quite simply, a demonstration project may not come with more money and say do it with what you got, but if you get a waiver grant, then you can get more money. And so clearly that would be, if there's a way to head this direction, I mean, there's always back doors in these things. So I guess that's what I'm looking at. Is there a way that
Chair Morissette, Senator Cruz, what I would like is a little bit of time. The bill's now been heard, a little bit of time, maybe a week, to have my folks go back. And by the way, this is the first time she's testified, and I think she did very well.
She did very well.
I'm an old veteran, as you can tell. I don't even get nervous anymore.
Scarred
old veteran. I'm scarred veteran.
You've been beat up a couple of times, right?
A few. A lot. But what I would like is a week for our folks to maybe go back and really look at this and look at the you know, and talk to Lori as well and mm-hmm. make sure that we're on the right track and is there a way we could either push the envelope or okay. come into another door.
Okay.
Because we're in agreement with the idea. It's okay. just that, okay. as you know, we're a complicated agency.
Okay.
And you're right. dealing with an even more complicated yeah. agency.
Right.
Thank you.
And you're dealing with a complicated committee.
Absolutely. The smartest
looking
one
for
in the
back
building.
Doors. Looking for ways to rescind anything we can rescind.
Because I think there's another problem, but I don't have my glasses.
Oh,
so
good,
I can't read
good.
What
Let's
the heck
forget
I
about that then. Well, Senator George, and then we're going to get into the real issue of pain.
Could you? Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Could you look into this idea of what the Legislative Council told us here that
absolutely
neutrality?
That's what we will do.
And the other thing is that, you know, if you're going to run a flag up there, ask what flag they'd like to have run up.
Exactly.
But the other thing is we do have folks. We've had substantial increases in power charges in places in Oregon. Cost of food is skyrocketing.
Yeah.
I mean, there must be some basis in which we could justify, look, we need a waiver because our folks are being hurt so badly because of the fact that we are just keep squeezing them tighter and tighter to where they can't afford food and medication. I know the federal government doesn't want to have that on their back.
Chair Morissette, Senator George, when there was and I might not be saying this right because I'm also not a fish and wildlife person, but when there was some problems, I believe it was last winter, on the coast with fishing, we weren't able to increase food stamps, but what we could do is do an outreach program, which we did. And we had brochures, and we contacted people. We went to Chamber of Commerce and all the Lions Club and all that and talked to folks to try to get the fishermen, because there was a stigma. They always have worked all their lives. Yeah. They didn't want to go apply for help. And so we tried to do an outreach program and did get many of them to sign up to help their families during the part of the year where they were not making any money when they normally would have, and through no fault of their own.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And we will carry it over and give you an opportunity.
Thank you.
To work with Ryan.
Okay.
Thank you. John Mullen, would you come up, please? Now we're going to get the straight scoop.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, John Mullen with the Oregon Law Center. And the Oregon Law Center, as the committee, I think, is well aware, works on issues for low-income people. And issues about food stamps and other benefits are pressing issues that come to our offices all around the state. I want to give a little bit of perspective, if I might, based on the work that I did for about 26 years as the director of Clackamas County Social Services. We're an area agency on aging disabilities. Disability and Community Action Agency. And when the end of the year rolled around, we braced ourselves for what we called the January changes. And sometimes when we had a little bit of extra money, if we did, we would need to hire temporary staff to, in essence, act as agents of the federal government to, in essence, giving with one hand and taking away with the other hand. So in checking back with my office, it's about a 3-to-1 difference. In other words, for every $3 of cost of living increase for Social Security benefits, we're taking away a dollar of food stamps. And basically, as the committee is well aware, we're talking about people who are very low income to qualify for these programs. And our agency at that time worked strictly with seniors and people with disabilities. And so I know there's been a lot of discussion about the various population, but there's no doubt in my mind that the people that we were serving were in desperate need of every dollar that they could get. Moreover, because there is a blanket mass mailing that's sent out to clients telling them about these changes, we had a number of people that had cognitive and other mental health kind of issues that would just be besides themselves with all kinds of anxiety about what's happening to my benefits, and they would call and they would come into the office. And so we'd go through all of these machinations, essentially, to take away a portion of the food stamp benefits. And this is not the Department of Human Services' fault. This is federally directed. And that's why I was very inspired when I saw this bill, thinking that there's an idea, another idea out there, like the many ideas this session, about saying, what does Oregon really want to do, and how do we want to let the federal government know we would like to operate programs here in the state? And one other brief point that I would make about this is that I had a chance to take a look just today at the memo from Lori Freeman. And one of the things that she points out is the federal government encouraged states to go out and get more people on the food stamp program because after welfare reform, so many people got lost benefits. And so we were out there doing our part in Clackamas County trying to get people who were really hungry signed up because, as the committee's well aware, Oregon was among was at the top, unfortunately, as being the most food insecure state in the country. So I just think that the testimony by DHS definitely shows there's some wrinkles in the bills, and I'd be happy to assist in any way possible so that we can look at getting the maximum benefit for people and making sure that they can hold on to every last dollar possible. And thank you very much for
thank
the opportunity.
Thank you, John. And Ryan Tribbett is standing in the back of the room, and Senator Metzger's staff person, and I'm sure he would welcome your assistance. So okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay. Thanks. Okay, we'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 865 and open a public hearing on Senate Bill 879. Kathy Hahn, would you come up, please? And Susan, would you come up? Now, this is a very simple issue that we don't want you to complicate, please.
Mr. Chair, could I ask you something about the last bill that we looked at as one of the sponsors of the bill? Do you know if anybody has compared, like, how we're treated in Oregon by the federal government in comparisons to other states? Because I have some personal knowledge of another state where so many people are on food stamps that are very capable of working, and so I just wonder if
I think that is an excellent question, and I know that our Medicare dollars are different from state to state, and we're quite a bit lower than some states, Florida for one. That's a good, an excellent
point. It's just kind of the old adage, I'll be fair with you, and I'm going to make sure you're fair with me.
Yeah.
And so I would like to know that.
Okay.
Put me as an eye on that also.
Oh, okay. Okay. I'll save your eye until we vote on a bill. that you don't want to give an eye on, I'll claim that eye. Okay, I will definitely check that out. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Okay, Ms. Hahn. would you introduce yourself, please? Oh, I'm sorry. Would you talk about the bill?
Yes, I'm
finally getting to the point where I've asked her to tell us about the bill before we rush into the public hearing.
Senate Bill 879 eliminates the responsibility of the Pain Management Commission to develop a pain management practice program for providers. It requires the Pain Management Commission to review pain management curriculum, post-secondary or training educational institutions, and make recommendations to the Assembly about legislation needed to ensure adequate education. It also requires dentists, occupational therapists, and physical therapists to complete pain management education programs. And you'll see before you the -2 amendments, and the reason they're the -2 is just there was an error with the drafting of the -1. The -2 amendments adds dentists, occupational therapists, and physical therapists to the list of professionals to be considered for the Pain Management Commission. It also sets dates by which dentists, occupational therapists, and physical therapists must complete pain management education programs.
Okay. Would you introduce yourself, please?
Yeah, Chair Morissette and committee members, I'm Kathy Hahn, Chair of the Pain Commission. The Oregon Pain Commission proposes to make the following changes to ORS 409.500, 0.510, and 0.560. We want to delete language that directs the Commission to develop a pain management practice program for providers. After much debate, our Commission has concluded that this is beyond our scope, and we couldn't really understand what the original intent from the bill way back when was, so we would like to just delete that to make it simpler. The OPMC would also like to add a provision allowing them to monitor and review the curriculum in the state's educational institutions, offering training in the affected disciplines. We believe that the long-term change will happen when pain management is made a focus of the basic education of healthcare professionals. We also request the addition of occupational therapists, physical therapists, and dentists to the professions already listed because we forgot them originally. Not to malign them at all. These healthcare professionals encounter people with pain on a daily basis and could greatly benefit from pain management education updates if they don't already do so. Thank you for hearing the bill.
Thank you. Thank you. Questions?
Mr.
Senator
Chair,
Berger.
I think I've had a discussion with you about my concerns about the lack of understanding of pain medications, and I think about Senator Joan Dukes, she just kept going on and on and on about pain medications, and I really didn't get it, and now I get it, and I think that this whole area really needs to be looked at. I've gotten a letter this week from a constituent about morphine psychosis and what they're dealing with in their family. And this can go on, just anecdotal after, you know, story after story. And so I think there needs to be curriculum. I think there needs to be something other than pain specialist, because the people that are treating patients, it's fine to bring in a pain specialist or to have the doctor confer with the pain specialist, but the doctor themselves need to understand pain management and the difference in pain medications. And I don't think it isn't so much the concern about addictions to pain medications. And what I'm trying to tell you, I'm telling you that there's not enough understanding of pain medications in just dealing with people that are terminally ill.
Senator Morissette.
Yes.
Senator Berger, yeah, I totally agree. Yes.
I think part of the intent of, well, the intent of this bill is to create quote-unquote pain specialist, and is that true?
Chair Morissette, the intent of this bill is not really to create pain specialists, but to create healthcare professionals that are much better managing pain and much more educated.
Okay. Are you a pain specialist?
Chair Morissette, I do consider myself a pain specialist because I have been practicing in a very narrow area of pain management for the last 25 years.
Okay, so you work as a pharmacist, you work with doctors and individuals who come to you.
Chair Morissette, yes, I work as a team member of a multidisciplinary team that we all we specialize in pain management, yes.
And I guess I would add, from my perspective, we need more a greater team approach to
Chair Moore said absolutely
to pain management. In
absolutely.
Other words, if a person that includes the people that we have listed here and the doctor and others who deal with the patient that he is dealing with, so there's a better understanding of pain and then the flip side of that, I don't know if it's the flip side, but it's a side a lot of people worry about, is the addiction part of it. And I know there's a reluctance on the part of some physicians to prescribe an addictive medication that might lead to an addiction, even though the person is dying, which in many cases doesn't make sense. But there are all of these shades of the reality out there that we're trying to open up and decide. And I know that Senator Dukes, when she introduced this, I was on the House side that time, and I spoke on the House floor in favor of the bill, and because I think chronic pain may be a symptom, but it's something that needs to be treated, because you may never get to the cause of it. It's there, and you may not be able to deal with the cause. So, anyway, other questions, comments? Yes, would you introduce yourself, please?
I'm Susan Yasinski. I am the vice chairperson of the Oregon Pain Management Commission. I'm not a medical person, so I'm not a specialist in pain, but I'm a pain patient, so maybe that makes me a specialist through the back door.
I think so.
I'm trained as a lawyer. I'm admitted to practice in New York, not in Oregon, so if you look me up on the Oregon Bar's website, I won't be there. I'm on New York's. Anyway, what I wanted to bring to your attention today is I've been working closely with legislative counsel in drafting these bills, and there is a change in the amendment that you have in front of you, I think, on page 3, lines 7 and 8. The effective date of this bill would be January 1st, 2008. I spoke with legislative counsel yesterday, and I believe there's another amendment in the pipeline.
Okay.
That would replace the January 2nd, 2012 date.
Okay. So the new date is?
January 1, 2008.
Okay.
We did get a new amendment from legislative council today, but it doesn't have an operative date in it, so there must have been an error in drafting.
Excuse me, does it read effective date?
2007.
You have the 21st. I'm looking at the older amendment.
Okay, Mr. Chair, we just got this.
Well, is the effective
morning.
Date, the new effective date is not.
There's actually no effective date listed in this in the dash two amendment, so I think that there was actually another error made.
It sounds that way.
Okay.
Because I haven't seen the draft yet, so I'm kind of speaking blind here.
Okay, well, we may have to come back to this.
I didn't even see that.
Senator Morissette?
Yes.
On page 3, on line 6, what I discussed with legislative counsel was that the effective date would be January 1st, 2008. And as I look at this, I'm just wondering if that's a standard date in which legislation would become effective, would they feel the need to write January 1, 2008?
Mr. Chair.
That isn't the effect.
The effective date of this act would be January of 2008, unless specified otherwise. All legislation, unless it has specified dates, it becomes effective.
Yeah, there's no emergency clause.
Right, there's no emergency clause.
So January of 2008 would be the effective date.
Okay, then I believe the bill's it's
then
correct.
Okay, that's why she didn't put it in there. Okay. Other questions or comments? Okay. Anyone, no one else wishing to testify? I'll close the public hearing and open the work session.
Chair.
Senate Bill 789. Yes.
I move the dash 2 amendment to Senate Bill 879.
879. Okay. Senator Cruz moves the dash 2 amendments to Senate Bill 879. Any
just
discussion?
One question. I may have missed this before, but when I'm reading the summary of the bill, eliminates the pain management from developing a pain management practice program and requires a commission to review pain management curriculum. Why the change in approach? And I just may have missed this earlier.
Chair Morissette, Senator George, change in approach as far as a practice program, or we felt that adding our oversight to curriculum of educational institutions was actually just an extension of the mandatory continuing education that we've already required of professionals that are already out of school. And so we started pondering, well, once this one-time mandatory CE is over, how do we ensure that our new students coming out of school have been adequately educated?
Yeah. Other questions? Seeing no other. Okay. We're in a work session.
Yes.
We have a motion.
We have a motion on the dash 2 amendment.
Okay. Senator Cruz moved dash 2 amendments. Seeing no further questions, so moved. Senator Cruz.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 879 as amended by the dash 2 amendments to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Cruz moves 879 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Would you call further discussion? Would you call the roll, please?
Senator George?
Aye.
Senator Monta
Sanderson?
Aye.
Senator Berger?
Aye.
Vice Chair
Cruz?
Aye.
Chair Morrison? Aye. Bill passes unanimously to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and Senator Monta Sanderson, who is on the Pain Commission, will carry the bill.
Thank you.
The next bill that we will hear is Senate Bill 880. We'll open a public hearing on Senate Bill 880.
Bill 880 deletes the definition of intractable pain and replaces all instances with just pain. Defines healthcare professional as a person who is licensed by a health professional regulatory board practicing within the scope of practice of that license and authorized to prescribe and administer controlled substances. And conforms language to apply existing statute regulating allowed administration of controlled substances in the treatment of pain, discipline associated with dispensing and administrating controlled substances in the treatment of pain, and written notice of risks associated with substances used in pain treatment to all healthcare professionals as defined in the statute. There is a dash one amendment which removes the requirement that prior to commencing treatment of pain, healthcare professionals provide and the patient sign written notice that discloses material risks associated with controlled substances to be used in the course of treatment.
Okay. Ms. Hahn, would you come up, please? And Susan.
Chair Morissette and committee members, my name is Kathy Hahn, Chair of the Pain Commission. The Oregon Pain Commission, in accordance with its charge to improve state policy that influences pain management in the state, proposes to update the Intractable Pain Act to eliminate restrictive language. This language is found in the Intractable Pain Act, which relates directly to the legal definition of intractable pain. The definition implies that opioids are not part of professional practice, and that physician immunity for prescribing is based on the requirement of having tried other modalities before opioids, regardless of the type of severity of pain or other patient needs. There are 9 other states that have an Intractable Pain Act that contains this type of definition found in Oregon policy. A number of states, including Michigan, North Dakota, Rhode Island, and West Virginia, have recently removed similar language from their laws because of the recognition that such language could be interpreted to restrict adequate pain management. Other minor changes include replacing the term physician with healthcare professional to more accurately reflect current controlled substance prescribers in the state of Oregon. The Pain Commission also recommends that if the word intractable is taken out, that the requirement for a material risk notice be removed, as the scope of possible treatment scenarios has greatly widened to encompass both acute and chronic pain. Requiring a material risk notice for all situations would be unfeasible. We acknowledge that its use may still be considered standard of practice in many instances. Thank you.
Questions?
I'm not sure, oh. Mr. Chair.
Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead.
Can you explain what the bill actually does?
Chair Moore said, Senator Montesanderson.
With the amendments.
So the bill, the main thing that the bill does is take out the word intractable and makes it a pain act.
Okay. And the follow-up?
Yes.
And why was that?
Chair Moore said, Senator Montesanderson, having the word intractable as has been illustrated in other states and by the Wisconsin Pain and Policy Studies Group becomes a limiting word. And if you have intractable pain, we are telling our physicians that they're going to be safe in prescribing opioids just with intractable pain, but we have many other kinds of pain. And so it's a very limiting term.
Thank you.
Yes. Senator Cruz and then Senator Berger. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, this is one of the frustrations you've been dealing with since day one. I mean, the reality of it is that people are in intense pain. An opioid that may be potentially addictive on its own as pain medication is not. And it's a whole culture change we're after here. So now this is a good tweak, I think.
Senator Berger.
You're removing some limitations by removing the word intractable. So now what are you including? And be specific. I'm not a medical person.
Chair Morissette, Senator Berger. By removing the word intractable, that means that all pain, whether acute or chronic or cancer or any kind of pain at all, is included in this act now, instead of having a type of pain that is only treated because nothing else will work. Intractable is considered something that all other things have been done. Surgery is ruled out. Everything else is ruled out. And it doesn't really even necessarily mean cancer pain. Intractable is a very narrow definition. And in the 90s, it was the thing to do to have an intractable pain act. But we are now finding that definition of intractable is quite limiting.
Further questions, Senator George?
I think we should move.
Okay. I just want to pause for just a second, though, because I think that's kind of what I was getting at in terms of you may have a very severe pain, but it may not, it could be over a condition, an ongoing condition that is acute or not necessarily intractable because all things haven't been tried, and it's hard to identify the source. It's the problem. Okay. So we will close the public hearing and open a work session.
Chair, I move the -1 amendment to Senate Bill 880.
Okay, Senator Cruz moves the -1 amendment. I'm sorry, we didn't.
It's okay. I would just reiterate what Kathy said. Okay. I don't want to waste your time.
Okay.
I'm just here in case
okay,
there's any
good.
Questions of the bill itself.
Okay.
You really want the bill passed, right?
I sure do.
There you go.
So any concerns about the -1 amendment?
Yeah, basically, all the -1 amendments do is repeal ORS 677485. And what is that?
Yes. Chair Morissette, Senator Montesanderson, that is the material risk notice. And so our intent at the very beginning was to make sure that that was taken out, and it inadvertently was not. You would find a huge problem if we left the material risk notice in, and all of a sudden it said pain instead of intractable pain.
Thank you.
You're also exempting health care professionals in the bill. Is that right? No?
Mm-hmm. No.
No.
No, they're expanding.
Yeah, they're...
From discipline?
Chair Morissette, Senator Verger, no.
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 Go ahead.
Chair Morissette, Senator Verger, I think what you're maybe reading there is language that's trying to make the physician or the prescriber feel more comfortable treating pain with opioids, and that they should not feel threatened by legal or regulatory scrutiny simply because they're using opioids in a pain condition. And so that's not really removing any responsibility.
And people have to agree to it anyway, don't they? I mean, when you're getting...
Chair Morissette, Senator Verger,
really
yes.
...heavy medication.
Yes.
Okay. Further discussion. Okay, would you... You have the motion on the bill.
We have the dash one.
On dash one.
So you need to...
Okay, we've approved one. The dash ones, and we'll...
Okay, now... Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 880 as amended to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation.
880 as amended to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation. Moved by Senator Cruz. Discussion. Seeing no discussion, will you call the roll, please?
Senator Ronda Davidson?
Aye.
Senator Berger?
Aye.
Senator George?
Aye.
Senator Vice Chair Cruz?
Aye.
Chair
Morissette? Aye. Why don't we carry that one, Bill?
Senate Bill 880 will move to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and Senator Cruz will carry this one.
Okay. No, you...
I'll carry it.
I'd be pleased to. I was in on the very beginning of this with Senator Duke.
Yeah,
so.
He was. So. I want to spread...
Spread it around.
Okay, thank you very much. We will adjourn.
Great.